You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama, baby, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy J's back with the vengeance at all the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. Yeah. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, 17 banners, way up in the rafters, J. King, John Corrales, and Sam Jam Packard. Focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly's, Rainy J's.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. We want to thank you for making us part of your regular routine. We are the Rain and J's. I am John Corrales. I cover the team for Mass Live. Joined by the kid, Jay King. It's been a minute, Jay.
It has. I've been gone long enough. I am now considering changing my name to the grown-ass man.
The grown-ass man, huh? Well, you're going to have to actually grow up for that to be.
Yeah, fine. I will remain the kid.
Today, we will be talking about the grown-ass man's piece in The Athletic, for which he covers the team, on Gordon Hayward. We'll do that later on. We'll spend the first couple of segments talking about Team USA. Team USA, which was eliminated from medal contention at the FIBA World Cup, 89-79 loss to France. Let's just get your immediate reaction, Jay. What did you think about this game against France?
The final 8 minutes kind of felt like one of the bad Celtics collapses from last year, where everyone was just kind of so interested in helping their team in their own fashion that they just kind of screwed up a little bit. There was still some bad luck. Like Frank Ntilikina hit some tough outside shots. He's not a shooter at all. Celtics players missed a bunch of free throws. Marcus Smart missed four in a row. Kemba Walker missed two out of three when he got fouled on a three ball. Like, free throws were just killers. And then France is just good. Gobert was the best player on the court. The small lineup. I'm intrigued by the small lineups because there are so many Celtics in those small lineups. And you wonder whether Brad Stevens can actually try to do that in the NBA season. But, you know, when Gobert kind of got things together in the fourth quarter, the small lineups didn't really have a chance.
Yeah, I was saying this on the Locked On Live post-game show that I said basically the same thing, that it kind of felt like last season with the Celtics. When you have all of this level talent, a lot of times there's no one guy who's obviously going to step up, everyone tries to take it upon themselves. And what worked for Team USA was moving the ball. Ultimately, Donovan Mitchell was hitting everything. But if they had just moved the ball, if he had just touched the ball, never mind just getting him the ball to score, just get him the ball so he could put pressure on the defense to force the defense to collapse, make a decision, then work it around. Then maybe Kemba could have gotten the ball on the move, could have gotten some open shots, and maybe some of those would have started to fall, rather than Kemba trying to take over and really taking the ball out of Donovan Mitchell's hands. Just a lot of the same things. And really now what we're seeing is exactly why superstars matter and why Danny Ainge rolls the dice on somebody like Kyrie Irving or really is intrigued and makes a push for like an Anthony Davis or whatever. Like that's why these stars are so valuable, because when you find yourself in a position where you need a basket it really helps to have a guy who's very obviously your star player, and you say, go get us a basket. And so I think that was part of it. You're right. There's a lot of just things that happen when you lose, like missing those free throws. Like, when the hell did Evan Fournier become a basketball god? Like, he's been destroying in FIBA.
Like, Fournier's good, man. He's a magician. Like, he can just fill it up.
He's a fine player, but, like, no one's looking at the Orlando Magic and saying, this is Fournier's team, baby. Like, he has his moments. He's a good basketball player. But, like, him, Patty Mills, Satoransky, like, all of these guys were like, yeah, these guys are good in the NBA, suddenly are just out of their minds, awesome, all-star level players in FIBA. And it comes with that experience, I guess, in understanding the rules and being cohesion.
When you empower a guy, he's going to do more impressive things, right? And Fournier was clearly with DeColo, Nando DeColo, France's go-to guy. And when you're in that position, it's just easier. And Team USA never really developed that. I thought for a while it would be Kemba. Today, obviously, Mitchell really had it going. And they kind of went away from him. They kind of went away from ball movement altogether. And when they were at their best in that third quarter, overthrowing a 10-point deficit, they played really small and they spread out France, and they kind of used Gobert and France's size against France. But you've got to be patient to do that. And you've got to get paint touches. You've got to kick it out and you've got to find the open guy. And they kind of went away from that. I think Team USA only had 18 three-point attempts in the game, if I'm not mistaken. I guess 20. 20 was the final tally. That's just not enough. When you're – what separates you is that you have more skill and that more speed and more perimeter talent, especially once Turner was in foul trouble and they decided to go small. Like, you should be launching threes. And you should be dragging those guys out to the arc. And USA never really did that. They never really committed to finding the shots that could have helped them separate from France. And part of that, too, was like Brook Lopez came in. And he's been cold for the entire tournament. And Team USA only like shot 33% from the arc so far, which is weird because they do have some capable shooters kind of all over their roster, but they just haven't shot the ball well as a team. And it was a tough night for Kemba, kind of his first dud of the tournament at a really bad time.
Yeah, that was really bad timing for that. I mean, obviously now you look at that and you say, well, Jason Tatum probably could have helped if he was ready to play. They held him out for an extra game. I don't know. Here's the funny thing. Team USA lost. They were eliminated from medal contention. They still have two more games to play. They play Serbia again tomorrow morning. Like, not Serbia again. They play again tomorrow morning. They play Serbia. And then the winner of that game goes to the fifth place game. And the loser of that game goes to the seventh place game. So there are still two games to play for the United States. So I don't know if Tatum's going to play or not or what. I know they've shut down Marcus Smart. And we'll talk a little bit more about Marcus Smart in the next segment. But having Tatum and his ability to hit threes, willingness to take threes, I obviously would have been a help. But I agree with you. Like, you got to really put some pressure on them. USA really played into exactly what France wanted them to do. They basically sagged Gobert on pick and rolls, right? They just packed the paint. They ran them off the three-point line. And instead of working the ball around and looking for a three, they took those long twos, those mid-range shots. And that was almost like when the Celtics faced the Milwaukee Bucks in games 2 through 5 last year. It was a very similar type of feel to that. Just guys going in and settling for those shots, the mid-range shots, and not really working the ball around.
And they also, and this is a thing a lot of guys do, and maybe sometimes it's a right play, But when they got Gobert in switches, like, guys try to attack him. And I remember specifically the Donovan Mitchell drive where Gobert stayed with him, swatted it from behind. It's like, when you have Gobert switched out on you, you don't have to always drive. And I think Steph Curry does it as well as anyone. Like, he'll get a big man on him and just pass the ball and move off the ball and get a wide open three. Like, sometimes that's how to beat a big man switching it. But Team USA chose to attack him, I think, too many times. And it wasn't just Mitchell that one time. He had a great game. But it was, I think, Kemba tried to attack him sometimes. Harrison Barnes, not necessarily on switches, but had a couple times where he kind of got spooked around the rim. Gobert was just really, really impactful and really the best player on the court.
Oh, absolutely. But, and I'm all for attacking a shot blocker. I believe in attacking a shot blocker. But, like, challenging the shot blocker, not trying to get – like, a guard can get by him, but Gobert doesn't need to stay in front of a guard like that because he can jump and he's got that reach. I just really think that they tried to beat him off the dribble and then – try to lay it in, and it was bad the way they attacked him. Go at him, get into his body, force him to, like, swing his arms down, try to get that contact, try to get to the free throw line, get him feeling you. So I think they made just a ton of mistakes all the way around. This was a game that they obviously could have won. The free throws were obvious. They could have taken better shots, but they didn't. Let's take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk about some of those small lineups because the Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown thing really stood out in this game. And Jay mentioned it earlier, so we'll dive into that a little bit more right here next on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Third quarter against France, Team USA was down 10, and all of a sudden they started turning things around. One aspect of the turnaround was Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown, when the U.S. went small, were switching onto Gobert defensively. They were getting low, they were getting into his legs. They were driving him off of a position where he felt comfortable. And when he got the ball, they made him do things that he wasn't really great at. And that led to stops finally. And it got the U.S. out running. It got him into some cross matches, got him a couple of three-pointers like we were talking about. And it really helped them move the ball. And I think that second unit especially was moving the ball better than the starting unit. And that really was what helped get the United States. Ultimately, I think it was a 7-point lead was their biggest lead. But back to what Jay, what you said was, it's going to be interesting to see how much of what Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown were able to do in this game and in other games, how much of that can translate into what the Celtics are trying to do, because we've talked about it a lot. The Celtics have questions about their front court, especially the power forward, and especially how they're going to use which center in what situation. I wonder how much Brad Stevens is going to say, huh, interesting. Oh, let me try that.
Yeah, you wonder. And obviously Popovich did it. Obviously Team USA doesn't have a perfect center situation, and a lot of their best players are wings and forwards and guards. And that's kind of similar to the Celtics. They are going to enter the season with their five best players all as guards and wings. And I don't know how realistic it is to go super small in the NBA, but France had an NBA-ish roster, like Gobert, Fournier, Batum, Nana De Colo even though he's not in the NBA, he's really good. Neil Akina, obviously he's an NBA player with real length for a guard. So can you do it? I don't know how much. I don't know which situations it'll be palatable in. But I think Brad Stevens will have to try it and see if it works and see if being super switchy can make up for being super switchy and having guys who can attack off the bounce and shoot from three everywhere will be enough to overcome not having any big men or even really close to big men out there. And look, if you're building a small lineup, like, you're going to have issues. Unless you have Draymond Green and a bunch of capable wings, you're going to have issues. There will be holes. There will be weaknesses. And France, I think we saw that they punished Team USA sometimes for that. But, like, as far as having a small lineup, it could be worse than the Celtics. Like, if you're going to go super, super duper small, like, Hayward's just about as strong as almost any wing out there, with the exception of, like, the LeBrons and maybe the Kawhis of the world. Tatum's super long. Jalen's long, athletic. Marcus Smart is just Marcus Smart.
Yeah, right,
so there are a lot of things, a lot of factors that could make that palatable in some matchups, but I still think it's like a super scary lineup to try. And I do think that the Celtics are going to have to lean on their centers, even though that's not perfect, because, like I said, the five best players on the team are really all 6'8" and shorter.
Yeah. There are going to have to be stretches where they definitely go with at least Jalen at the four. And obviously, if they do, they could run any number of combinations. If it's Marcus Smart with Kemba and Tatum, Hayward, Brown, like that's, I mean, who's the center in that lineup? That's kind of like one of those experimental type of things that they might try, just depending on the matchup. Obviously, they're not going to do it against Philly. Or you know what? Who knows? Maybe they will do it against Philly, for all we know, and just try to combat their size.
That would be madness.
I mean, you want to go with a bunch of 7-foot guys? Fine, no problem. We're just going to go super small, and we can't defend you, but you can't defend us, and we're just going to just get weird with it.
And I want to make it abundantly clear, I'm not advocating for a tiny lineup to emerge as the Celtics' closing lineup in all situations.
No
matter what. Like, I'm just intrigued by what could just be an experiment. That's it.
That, I mean, look, you have to consider all of these combinations. The thing, we know Marcus Smart can switch onto bigs. Like, we've seen it a million times. We get it. You know, shout out to Pina for, you know, advocating for Marcus Smart at center. I mean, this must be his, like, victory lap around here. But Jaylen Brown as a power forward is, I don't want to say a revelation, but the fact that he's doing it and was effective with it is encouraging and was a step forward. And it makes you think that you can try that a little bit more than maybe you would have thought before, if Team USA wasn't playing or if Jaylen Brown wasn't on the team. So my biggest fear with a lineup that was like Kemba, Hayward, Tatum, and Brown was like, okay, where do all the shots come from? How do all these guys get their offense? But if you run Brown as an effective power forward and he's setting picks, and then all of a sudden the guy who sets the picks can get the ball a lot and score. And now he's shown a little bit of an ability to score in the middle of the paint, a little bit of an ability to create out of the post. Like, you start to see these little bits and pieces and you say, huh, maybe his future is kind of as a small ball four, where he's going to get the minutes, the touches, and all that stuff that he's looking for. I don't know what it's going to ultimately be. This is the, you know, the height of the speculative season. We don't know what stuff is on paper that's going to translate in the NBA. The fact that he did it against, you know, France or Turkey or whomever, that doesn't mean that it's going to translate necessarily to the NBA. But, man, it really is something intriguing.
It's funny because last year at the start of the season, when the Celtics were playing small with the Erotic City lineup, which didn't happen to be much Erotic City.
Not very.
But when they were, their defense was fantastic. And Brad Stevens brought it up recently that's one of the things he and the coaching staff have noticed while poring through this past season, is that even though things never clicked for that lineup, and even though they went away from that almost the entire season until unveiling it a little bit in the playoffs, like those small lineups, granted with Al Horford at the center position, were very viable and even great defensively. So that's something that he's kept in mind. And at the same time, like, then the Celtics defense totally tapered off until they went back to the two bigs with Horford and Baines later in this season. And obviously those guys aren't there. So it's tough to predict exactly what Stevens will do. Obviously Cantor should play at least some. He looks like the probable starter, and I think Tice will play some, and Robert Williams will have a chance to earn minutes, and Poirier will have a chance to earn minutes. But you wonder just how small they will go. It's interesting. It is interesting, especially after you kind of see it in action with Team USA.
So we'll see. Here we got
the non-medal winning Team USA, by the way.
That's just crushing. So Team USA plays again in the morning. Who knows when you're listening to this? This is the Thursday show, and they play again on Thursday morning. So we'll see what happens with Jalen there. Marcus Smart has been shut down for the rest of the tournament because of nagging injuries. Apparently he has something with his knuckle. He's got something with his quad. He's got something with his calf still. So they're just
Marcus Smart to go a month and pick up like 19 different injuries and then still just be a menace despite it?
Right, exactly. Like, he's out there. He's like banged up enough where they're shutting him down. I'm sure obviously very precautionary, but yeah, that's total Marcus Smart. He's over there jumping over like ropes that are around the floor, and he's diving everywhere. Like, he's just getting x-rays. That's Marcus Smart. Like, I'm sure there's a segment of Celtics fandom that's like, all right, good. Shut him down, wrap him in bubble wrap, send him home. We're done. We're done with this. So we'll see which Celtics play if Jason Tatum comes back. We'll talk about that in upcoming shows. In the meantime, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about Jay King's piece on Gordon Hayward and what the, realistic expectations for this upcoming season will be for Gordon Hayward. Stick around. We're coming right back in the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
If you are a subscriber to The Athletic, pause for Jay King plug. Subscribe to The Athletic.
Thank you, sir.
You will find on the site today a piece entitled, "After a Summer Based in Boston, Expectations Again Grow for Gordon Hayward." Gordon Hayward has been working with Scott Morrison. Morrison has been in town not only to coach the Summer League team, but to work heavily with Gordon Hayward. So, Jay, it's your piece. You're the one who talked to Scott Morrison. Give us the gist of the piece without giving too much away so people still have to go read it.
Well, there's been a lot talked about how Hayward decided to stay in Boston this summer, and Brad Stevens revealed recently that Hayward kind of sat down with the staff and they mapped out a plan for his off season. And so I just kind of wanted to try to find out what that was and what he's been working on and what his mentality has been through the off season. So I got in touch with Scott Morrison, who's his personal assistant coach, and just talked to him about what they've been doing, what skills they've tried to sharpen and everything like that. And it sounds like Hayward has really, really been going through some pretty intense workouts very early in the morning, which is when he likes to work out, and that he's kind of ratcheted things up from an intensity standpoint from what he did a couple summers ago, his last healthy off season. And it seems clear to me that he thinks he has some unfinished business after the way last year went, and that he really wants to return to that star level that he showed a couple years ago when he was healthy.
Yeah.
So that was my takeaway, is that he kind of changed his outlook toward the offseason now that he's healthy again, and now that he's dealt with the frustration that was the past year, 2 years really, since the injury happened.
I think one thing in talking to Gordon Hayward throughout the season, this summer when he's had a couple of events, you always kind of felt like he hated answering the health questions. Like, that's just...
And they were so annoying, weren't they?
Oh, I mean, but it's constant. And it was the only thing anybody really wanted to talk about with him. And
it was no matter what happened. Like, if he had a good game, it would be like, oh, are you feeling so much better now? Is your ankle healthy? Are you so much more confident? Why are you so much more confident? And then after a bad game, it'd be like, where'd your confidence go? Why wasn't your ankle feeling well? And it was like, no matter what happened, he just couldn't escape it. And he was never going to escape it the entire year.
Nope. And that's absolutely true. You suffer an injury like that, and it's just so brutal that your entire, I mean, hell, his entire career could be framed by that, depending on what he does this upcoming season. Paul George is the most obvious kind of catastrophic, even though it's not the same injury. He overcame it. He became an MVP candidate, and nobody really talks about his leg much anymore. So Gordon Hayward's trying to take that same path. And I'm sure there's going to be a little flurry once training camp opens in, at this point, 20 days or so. So there's going to be a little bit of a... it's not over, is what I'm saying, but he wants it to be over. And the only way to make it over is to get himself back to the level that he was before. And I'm pretty sure that he's very well aware of the, like the Jackie McMullough thing at the end of last season, where she was like, yeah, guys were upset because they seemed to force feed Gordon Hayward. And I'm sure that that's like a shitty thing. Like, you're sitting there trying to come back. It's not your fault. You're doing the best that you can. And to hear that, you just, that's got to just, if it was me, that would piss me off. And I'm sure things like that are probably driving him to kind of put all this behind him.
Yeah, it was interesting too that Hayward and the coaching staff decided he should work on a lot of ball handling drills, partly because nobody knew whether Kyrie would come back. And I do think, like, obviously they signed Kemba after Kyrie left, and point guard isn't a huge issue at all. But I do think there will be some opportunity for Hayward to show off his improved ball handling skills in some second unit lineups, because I think obviously Terry Rozier is gone and Marcus Smart can play point guard, but he's not really a natural point guard. And Carson Edwards is the size of a point guard, but he's more of an off ball scorer. And so I think we could definitely see second unit lineups with Hayward at the one and Edwards at the two, or Hayward at the one and Romeo Langford at the two and Jaylen Brown at the three, and just a lot of interchangeable pieces everywhere. So that's something I think the Celtics used that kind of sparingly last year, mostly because they had Kyrie, and behind him they had Terry Rozier, who they were committed to playing even when he struggled a little bit. But now they don't have that obvious backup point guard. And so I'll be interested to see if Stevens does try more interchangeable second units with Hayward at the one and Smart out there, and a lot of switchability and versatility and defensive potential.
I also think that if you go back to his Utah days, he was most effective with the ball in his hand. So getting him out there initiating an offense is a great way to get him back into what he used to be, which does make me curious about what the Celtics are going to do, how they're going to use him, what's the best way to use him, because I still sort of see an argument for bringing him off the bench. and I don't know what the right way is going to be. Like, starting him at the three is sure that I there's a total argument to be made for that. Bringing him off the bench as a primary ball handler, maybe at least to start the season, I don't know. Getting him back, working him back in, there's an argument to be made for that as well. So whatever it is, Gordon Hayward with the ball in his hand at full health is something that I think is very effective. We're all looking at Kemba and Jason and Jalen as guys, the primary guys that are going to score. There's not a lot of discussion about Gordon Hayward being the number one option or 1A or whatever. I think there's a timeline that exists where Gordon Hayward is the guy on this team and the obvious guy on this team.
Ooh, Gordon Hayward, the obvious guy.
I mean, it's possible. I mean, we're back into the, it could be Kemba as the obvious guy. It could be Tatum as the obvious guy, but there is definitely a possibility where Gordon Hayward was a Western Conference All-Star, and that's not like that far off. Like, it's not like ancient history. He can shoot, he can drive, he can pass, he can handle the ball, he can defend, like he can do everything. The guy that they signed before they even knew that Kyrie Irving was available, he was going to be the guy on this team. I think there's a possibility that he can do that again. But I guess I've always been bullish on Gordon Hayward.
Obviously, this summer was huge for him, and he concentrated on it as such. Like, it sounds like he knew full well how critical this summer would be for him, for his career. And he has reasons beyond just wanting to get back to normal. Like, he is a player option for his fourth year.
Sure, yeah.
He's entering the third year in his contract. And so this could be a year he makes some money. He makes a lot of money. But he has to prove it again on the court. And it's very obvious. And he's always been a guy that worked hard. It's not like he was slacking off before. He's put a lot of concentration and effort into rehabbing. And before that, he put a lot of concentration and effort into growing from really like a rough rookie season into being, like you said, John, a Western Conference All-Star. But it does sound like he just set out to kind of with a mission this summer. And everybody has talked about the type of work that he's put in, from Danny Ainge to Brad Stevens to Scott Morrison. Like, everybody that's gone over there in the organization has just talked about how hard he's worked this summer. And it's important. That could go a long way toward deciding what the Celtics ceiling is the form that he comes back in.
So we'll see how that pays off. We'll talk a little bit more about Team USA again in the upcoming weeks as they continue in their non-medal games. We're the Rain and Jays. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Subscribe to us if you're a new listener. Wherever podcasts exist, give us that 5-star rating, give us that good written review, and share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Rain and Jays.